We need European Union to lead, to harmonize, to coordinate the public health policies.
Health does depend on DNA code, but it must not depend on postal code.
Europe's Beating Cancer Plan is the EPP's baby.
I'm going to give credit to the EPP group in this mandate because they have championed the work I and many other EPP colleagues have done on raising awareness on mental health and well-being.
EPP group members of the European Parliament on how across the EU27 healthcare, including mental health, has been a key concern. In recent years, the European Union has had to face a crippling COVID-19 pandemic, a shortage of medicines and medical supplies, growing mental health disorders in part due to that pandemic, and delays in healthcare services. In fact, 2 out of 3 Europeans would like to see a common European health union, according to a Eurostat survey, ensuring quality care for all Europeans. So in this podcast, we'll look at how the EPP group is working hard towards a true European health union, has put cancer high on the EU agenda with a special parliamentary committee, and is making sure the Beating Cancer Plan is fully put into action. There's also an EU action plan for mental health and the challenge of protecting children's health, especially when it comes to rare diseases. All in this episode of our special podcast series, Europe That Protects You. So what is this European Health Union all about, and how will the EPP group promote health in the next parliamentary term after the lessons learnt from the COVID-19 pandemic? Here's Tomislav Sokol, the EPP group's spokesman on public health.
The European Health Union has several different aspects. So first, we have the question of preparedness for future crises, because we saw that we were not prepared, that there was lack of coordination, there was lack of data exchange between member states. We had all of these limitations, border closures, etc. We had different rules on pandemics, on preparedness plans, etc., etc. So all of these things should not happen in the future, because consequences then can be much worse than they were during COVID. So what we did is we created this whole set of rules. We strengthened the mandate of current EU bodies and created some new ones like HERA, with the sole purpose to be more prepared and more resilient for future crises.
HERA, that's the European Commission's Health Emergency Preparedness and Response Authority. It's among the actions backed by the EPP group to improve cross-border cooperation before and during a crisis.
When something happens, that we cannot act together, that we can cooperate, for instance, that we have joint procurement of medical countermeasures so that all citizens in all member states reach them in time, especially those where they're needed the most. So all of these things are very important.
For Europeans, that also means getting quality healthcare wherever they live in the EU and wherever they seek that care with simplified rules.
If you want to access healthcare abroad, healthcare in other member states, so you have this right under EU law. But if you want to know what your rights are and what the procedures are, you have to be an expert in health law, essentially. So definitely the system is too complicated, too cumbersome. The decision-making process on reimbursing these treatments are too long. And this is the reason why not a lot of patients, not a lot of EU citizens are using or utilizing the possibilities to access cross-border healthcare. So we need to change that. We need to simplify those rules. And this is what I'm advocating strongly here in the European Parliament.
The EU Health Union also aims to future-proof health for the unexpected. Adam Yarabas, MEP, chairs the Parliament's Public Health Subcommittee. He himself was a victim of COVID-19.
I'm grateful to doctors, nurses and people who saved my life, and we should help them, support them in their work to have more efficient health system in Europe. It was our EPP initiative to establish a European health policy, to start with European Beating Cancer Plan. So our success is we showed that is needed for our citizens, and I hope we will do in the next term and for the future for health of our citizens.
To do that, Yarabas wants to raise the Public Health Subcommittee to full committee status and to anticipate future crises with better data and quicker risk analysis.
We need to also strengthen the EU's ability to identify global health threats in advance based on our independent knowledge. The experience of COVID-19 shows that depending on the information from third states, may be a problem, and recognizing threats in time may determine whether we will be able to stop pandemics and the EU borders, or to be better prepared, saving the health and lives of EU citizens and allowing European economies to function normally. In response to the Commission's white paper on artificial intelligence, I postulated the use of artificial intelligence to forecast pandemic threats.
As we learned during the COVID-19 pandemic, having, developing and producing medical supplies was key in beating the virus. That's where the EU's pharma strategy comes in. Dolores Montserrat was the lead negotiator on the legislation.
We have to facilitate the access to market of generics and biosimilars and drugs. Why? Because this allows us to have affordable medicines for all the European citizens.
One way to do that is to empower the European Medicines Agency, or the EMA.
We have to reduce the bureaucracy. So if one drug is approved by EMA in Netherlands, no, because we have the agency in Netherlands, 6 months after, all the national agencies, they have to approve that drug. Why? Because we want this drug to arrive to the market really quick, because we want this drug to arrive to all the hospitals, for all the patients. Second thing, it is very important to continuing investing in these new innovative drugs. This is the reason that the European Union, this term, we achieve the Horizon program, for example, that we put a cancer mission, means that we put a lot of money to continuing invest in research about cancer, rare cancers too, pediatric cancers too.
It also means tackling the shortage of medicine and medical supplies the EU had increasingly outsourced from other parts of the world.
We remember everybody at the beginning of the pandemic seeing our nurses, our doctors, without protecting clothes. And we saw them with plastic bags. We cannot allow anymore that issue. We need to produce in Europe all our supplies. I mean, we need our own supply because we need a strategic autonomy of Europe. So we need to say to all the industry, come to Europe to produce, made in Europe. Why? Because we want to have everything that we need, because for us are very important our professionals, sectors as nurses, doctors, and the patients too.
That takes planning for the next crisis and building strategic reserves linked to a civil protection force, which the EPP group has supported in the European Parliament.
It's very important to create an early warning, to know very fast when we have some shortage in some product. Why? To give quickly a solution, to push to produce that product that perhaps is in shortage or in 3 months is going to be in shortage. And third, we create a stockpiling, because if one day we have another emergency health, we are going to have that stockpiling to give these medicines to all our population, to all our European citizens.
Then there are the diseases to fight continuously. One leading killer, of course, is cancer. Every year, 1.3 million people in the EU die of cancer, and 2.7 million are diagnosed with it. The EPP group, led by Manfred Weber, takes it further with a 10-step European master plan to fight cancer. Parliament then formed a special committee on beating cancer, and the European Commission unveiled a European cancer plan on prevention, detection and treatment. Dr. Peter Lisa has been a leading force on health for the EPP group, and he wants to get the plans fully activated, backed by billions in funding.
The Beating Cancer Plan is a big success story for EPP. We raised it years ago, and then the other political groups joined. The European Commission, under the leadership of Ursula von der Leyen, joined and really made it her own project. And unfortunately, Ursula von der Leyen and Manfred Weber both have a personal story behind. They lost a brother or a sister with cancer, and I'm very grateful that we have so strong leaders here. Now the plan exists, but it needs to be implemented. We have 4 billion euros. That's a good starting point. But what is even more important, in my view, is that we avoid obstacle for scientists. And that's why the adoption of the European health data space is so important. Scientists tell me, for example, a very prominent expert on pediatric cancer says, if I do my clinical trials only in Germany, it takes 10 years to get a new drug for children that suffer from cancer. If I do it in Europe, it's 1 year. But the different interpretation of the European health data protection regulation is difficult, and that's why we need European health data space to make it easier for these scientists.
Among the EPP Group's 10 steps to beating cancer, stress testing EU policies to remove obstacles to research, as well as jointly buying medicines, as we did during the COVID-19 crisis. Dolores Montserrat has more on that.
We want to tell to all the European citizens that cancer, it is a hope. And with this beating cancer plan that we achieve it, it is hope for them. Second, we put in the Horizon program, that is the biggest research program in Europe, a lot of money to research in cancer medicines. Third, for us, it's very important to put new tools to help the European countries to reach more drugs. For example, a joint procurement means to buy together all the countries in Europe to get the innovative drugs for cancer patients. Why? Because we want to reduce the gap on the access of the medicines between the different European countries.
Dr. Fatima Cardoso treats cancer patients. She's director of the breast unit at Champalimo Clinical Center in Lisbon. She's president of the ABC Global Alliance for Women with Advanced Breast Cancer. And she's also a member of the initiative called Transforming Breast Cancer Together, which promotes cancer prevention, screening, support, and innovation.
Being a cancer patient has to be a full-time job. And sometimes that's what they feel like, because the whole day is going around the appointments at the hospital, the treatments they have to take, the consequences of those treatments and the limitations that entails for their daily life.
So what's a day in the life of a patient? Cardoso explains one she knows of a young mother.
She prepares every morning to try to provide the normal life for the kids, get them to school, and then goes to the hospital to have the appointment with the oncologist, does the blood test, verifies if everything is okay, and then goes to treatment. And treatment takes always a couple of hours. And then finally she's finished and goes back to her home, get some rest, do all the daily activities that she has to do. She's currently not working. Because work doesn't have flexible timetables, and so she's not able to work full time, and therefore she's being forced to be on sick leave. So by the end of the afternoon, she goes and pick up the kids at school and stays with them a little bit, plays with them a little bit, but starts to feel tired from the treatment.
What do cancer patients like that young mother need most? Cardoso says several things that can make a huge difference for them and for the healthcare system.
Access to the best quality of care. And that is not exclusively access to expensive medications. Patients need a proper diagnosis that is not delayed, and then a proper treatment by a multidisciplinary team that is also specialized in treating the kind of cancer that you have. And there are several pieces of data showing that if you are treated by a specialized, experienced, multidisciplinary team, your survival, meaning the duration of your life, is going to be better, as well as your quality of life. And more than that, and importantly for the governments, it is also cost effective, because these teams tend to use only the resources that are needed and avoid waste.
Intensifying the fight against childhood cancer is another step in the EPP Group's action plan. Children and young adolescents with cancer are often hit with rare types of diseases, And there should be at least one specialised youth centre for cancer care in every EU country. Dr. Lisa and the EPP group want all kids to get the best treatment available for any disease.
We have a framework for incentives on rare diseases and on treatments for children. But unfortunately, that is not good enough when children suffer from cancer, because that is particularly expensive to do this research. But on the other hand, if a child dies from cancer, this is devastating for the family. And it is the most common cause of death after the first year of life. And that's why we need to tackle it. It's a clearly European task, because only together we can have the momentum. And we need to fine-tune the legislation on pediatric drugs and on rare diseases, orphan drugs. And here we have a proposal on the table from the European Commission. The problem is that some other political groups only see the costs. They want as much generics as possible. So, but if we don't have innovation, we will not help patients that we cannot help today, and children suffering from cancer, unfortunately, in many cases, we cannot help them. That's why better incentives are necessary.
Incentives like enough patent protection on new drugs encourage companies to develop them.
You should have a longer time of protection so that the generics, the cheap competitors, can come to the market only later, which means it pays off to invest in this specific area. So we don't need more of the same. We need breakthrough innovations.
And for those Europeans who beat cancer, they also need more support.
There's more to be done, for example, on cancer survivors. When you have been successfully treated and the doctor says, you're fine, I don't want to see you anymore, you still have problems with insurance, for example, because it's in your medical history. So we need to fight cancer, but we also need to fight discrimination of cancer survivors.
And what about heart disease? Maria Grazia Carvalho is co-chair of the Parliament's MEP Heart Group. She's spearheading the EPP group's call for a European cardiovascular health plan.
Cardiovascular diseases is the first cause of death in the world and in Europe. And inspired by what EPP has done with the cancer plan, the cardiovascular societies, medical research, patients' organization have asked the politicians from EPP to consider the cardiovascular diseases for the electoral manifest as a priority. And they are requesting that we consider in this manifest more research and development, more data gathering, more public awareness, advocacy, training of the professionals.
The effort would be coordinated through a knowledge centre.
The knowledge centre is requesting that more attention should be paid for research and innovation on this sector and for data gathering and data collaboration between the different research centres and different member states. So if we have data, if we have research and innovation in this area, the knowledge on cardiovascular diseases can advance much faster.
Cardiovascular disease is one example of inequality that a European health union needs to tackle.
36% of the deaths from cardiovascular-related diseases. One thing that a lot of people do not know is that more women die of cardiovascular than men. We have the perception that cardiovascular disease is a man's disease. No, it's mainly a women's disease. We have in the FAM committee done work on this and the initiative report that shows exactly this. And also is the cause of death, the biggest cause of death of the babies before 1 year. So a cardiovascular is a threat and very important for an aging population.
There is also a disparity in cardiovascular care across the EU27. What Carvalho calls
geographic inequality. More people die on cardiovascular diseases in Eastern and Central Europe than in Western and Nordic, because there is in these countries in the West and the North, there is better prevention and awareness of this disease. So there is a lot of work to be done for also for the cohesion of Europe, to have less inequalities in Europe.
The EPP Group also aims to launch an EU strategy to combat Alzheimer's disease and dementia and Parkinson's, and it's successfully led the drive for a European care strategy, something Dr. Cardoso says is urgently needed.
The role of the carers are very often forgotten. And although there has been an interest lately to highlight their importance in practice, so the support they have in practice in each of the European countries is very limited. And they are basically on their own, both physically and financially, because many people have to stop working to take care of a cancer patient, and they are not compensated financially as they should be. Also, the psychological burden. Yeah, I'm sure you know that in the majority of European countries, psychological support is not paid. I believe that we need to go from words to actions.
One part of healthcare often considered taboo in the past is mental health. Maria Walsh has taken the lead on the EPP Group's call for an EU action plan for mental health.
The fact it's not seen as a competency of the European Union, it's done at the work at member state level, so in my instance, Ireland. But there is a lot of shared practice, and what I mean by that is lived experience. How can we learn from one country to another? How can we make sure things like early detection, better supports for our young people, education, removal of the stigma and discrimination, and ultimately, how do we collectively, as an EU block of 27 countries and enlarging, that we can ensure statistics and reports that are telling us the second leading cause of death right now in our EU is death by suicide for our young people. That is a staggering statistic. And when we look at the future of our EU leaders, doctors, nurses, teachers, farmers, they're our young people. And we need to make sure that we have all these steps in place as an EU to ensure that nobody's mental health goes undetected, unsupported, and ultimately they know where to go when they need the help the most.
Part of that effort is to raise awareness and encourage those in need to come forward, especially among young people, that it's okay to ask for help. So how about a hotline?
I think speaking about it is the most powerful way to remove and ease the burden of stigma and discrimination. Where do I go for help? How do I go for help? And how can I access information faster and get those supports? So there's a couple of things we can do within that for stigma and discrimination that if you are feeling that, take for instance, a European-wide mental health number. How amazing would that be if we can call all in one number, regardless of our language, of where we're coming from?
Developing and expanding knowledge on health, breaking down barriers to it, is a crucial part of modern healthcare. Tomislav Sokol is part of the EPP Group's drive for a European health data space.
Health data space will make it possible for doctors to conduct diagnosis much faster, much more efficient, without having to duplicate tests and without having overlaps with something that has already been conducted. And I think this is one of the biggest advantages of the idea of having a European health data space.
What's more, better exchange of data for research can lead to new treatments, new medications.
We have enormous amounts of data lying around which are unused. In every hospital, you have certain data sets on patients suffering from some diseases, but they're just not used for research innovation because people do not know that they exist. So the whole idea is that all of these data sets will be cataloged. For instance, let's say in a hospital in Berlin that they have a data set on pancreatic cancer. So this data set will be cataloged, the existence of this data set will be published, and if some researcher from a university in the Netherlands wants to access this data and do research, they will be able to ask for permission from a public body in Germany. The idea is to have much better decision-making in healthcare, better cooperation, and that we can develop much more medical technologies, new medicines, innovative medicines, which save lives much faster than now.
The EPP Group made public health a European priority in the European Parliament's current five-year term, marked by the COVID-19 pandemic. And as we just heard, the biggest political group in the European Parliament ensured a successful vaccine development and drew lessons to be better prepared for future health threats. It also secured more funds for health matters. During this term, we've made our plan to fight cancer a reality, as we pledged. But the EPP Group ambition on health doesn't stop here. This is a priority also for the years to come. Encouraging, incentivizing new ideas in medicine, in treatment as well as prevention. Stepping up the fight against cancer and heart disease, increasing the focus on child health care, including fighting rare diseases, and mainstreaming diagnosis and care for mental health, building a data space across the EU27 and beyond, all part of the EPP Group's drive for a European health union that aims to give all Europeans access to high-quality care, no matter where they live. So that's all for this episode of our special podcast series, Europe That Protects You. Make sure you join us next week as we dive into other burning topics with our guests. For more, follow us via @EPP Group. So goodbye for now.